How can you build a career in architecture that aligns with your passion for travel? And what does it really take to live a location-independent lifestyle? Find out as Sara Collata shares her journey from traditional architecture to digital nomadism to online business growth in this episode of Architecture Business Club, the weekly podcast for solo and small firm architecture practice owners just like you who want to build a profitable, future-proof architecture business that fits around their life. I'm the host, John Clayton, and if you want a business in architecture that gives you more freedom, flexibility and fulfillment, then go to architecturebusinessclub.com/blueprint and download the Architecture Business Blueprint. It's the step-by-step formula to freedom for architects, architectural technologists and architectural designers, and it's absolutely free as a gift from me. Now let's discuss location independence. Sara Collata is an architect and digital transformation expert. Her mission is to raise the financial well-being of architects. She's the host of Architecture Talk Tank, a show which serves as a platform for industry specialists to talk about business, marketing and profitability in architecture. Sara helps architecture professionals develop online businesses and create online courses. She also works as a business developer for medium to large size architecture firms, helping them manage their finances and implement better client attraction strategies. Sara, welcome to Architecture Business Club.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's a pleasure to have you here. You work very hard with the various projects that you're involved in. Like, one of your passions is skydiving. It's quite an unusual passion to have, quite an unusual hobby. How does it feel to jump out of a plane?
Absolutely fabulous, really. Yeah, I love adventure, you know, and I feel like I got attracted to this because the sense of freedom you get, you know, when you push your boundary, and really is the feeling I can describe when you fly. It's freedom and just overcoming your fears, overcoming your own limitations. It also is very freeing. So that's initially what attracted me. And also just when you I follow people on Instagram that are doing this, like jumping out of planes, the way they look out there in the sky flying, it's just been really appealing. I wanted to feel that. And so, yeah, I did my course, never looked back ever since, but at least it's been a whole new adventure of doing that.
Sounds amazing. Would you say you're an adrenaline junkie?
Depends. I mean, no, not really. Quite honestly, find a lot of peace in doing that. Like, you just really need to learn to control your fears and your mind, and you need to be very well prepared. And there is a sense of calmness that comes upon you when you do it. You have to focus. Everything is pre-planned, and it's really just taught me a lot about how I show up in the world. I really can attribute a lot of a sense of responsibility, and I think almost like my career success is to skydiving, because I've learned to show up in a different way and take full responsibility for myself. And I started to apply that mentality to a lot of things I do in my everyday and my business. It's accounted to a lot of success.
It's funny, isn't it, how those transferable skills, there's things that you can learn that you can apply to your business. They can come from the most unusual of places, like skydiving, perfect example. We are not here to talk about skydiving for the whole interview, though, as much as I'd love to, because I love geeking out about stuff like that. But what we are going to talk about is how architects can craft a location-independent business. I'm really excited to talk about this. For anyone that isn't familiar with the concept, what does it mean to be location independent?
Yeah, really, just to be able to travel, I guess. And it certainly was a big agenda for me all my life. I loved traveling, and it was quite tricky to realize that as much as like you can travel for architecture, you always tie into projects, locations for a longer period of time too. So even though like you might be building internationally, you're going back to certain locations over long periods of time. And then it's not really traveling anymore in a way. Like, it's not exploring so much. I quite realized that like the format of my travels was different when I was working in architecture, and that I wanted more freedom and location independency to the extent of where I can work from different places and I can really have the time to put down my laptop and explore the environment I'm in and do a lot of fun activities. And so at some point in my life, I just decided to focus in on building a business that can enable me to do that, really. And so independence in that respect comes from being able to work from a laptop today.
Got it. So, I mean, you've been quite a globetrotter throughout your career. You've done a lot of travel after studying architecture in London. You spent time working in China, Berlin, Guatemala. You've been involved in charity work. At what point was it in particular that you really decided that you wanted to be like fully location independent and not tied to a traditional practice and those traditional architecture projects?
Yeah, it was after 6 years in Guatemala. I went there to start a charity. The idea of it was sort of the motivation behind it was twofold. One, I wanted to build, and I just felt after doing my internship in China that I don't want to skip or jump over this whole process of being a CAD monkey. I saw myself more as visionary creator. I also always had sort of managerial and leadership sort of capacity, skills, I don't know, interests, talents. And so I saw myself, I had confidence in my ability to step into that and manage bigger projects. And I really just wanted to do that, to be fair. And so, you know, being 23 and coming out of that internship in China, it was like, I don't like the projects I was working on there and the everyday activities I was involved with. And I imagined my life differently. And so I really just took a massive leap of faith and took life in my own hands with designing, you know, how I wanted to live in my 20s. And having a charity at the time was connecting my passion for, you know, humanitarian projects, my passion for natural building, my passion for traveling, and then also that ability to just build and find money for projects, pick up my own projects, put together teams, and make projects happen. And so I dedicated my 20s to that. And I was running Tribe Lab out of Guatemala. We're doing projects all around Central America. I also did some refugee projects in France because there was this big refugee crisis at the time in Europe, reasons why UK, you know, went into Brexit. But yeah, I did come to France and I worked 6 months in a refugee camp as well. So it was really interesting at the time. I did definitely a lot of project management and recruiting people, putting together teams, fundraising, managing budgets, and really just construction management. We were working as a small team out of an office in Guatemala, but also had different contractors and collaborators that we worked with. Being 27 and in the middle of it all, there was definitely a lot of things to account for success, but I didn't make a good profit and I struggled financially. And it just got to a point where I just thought, I don't want to be doing this in my 30s. I did feel stuck on projects. As I lived in Guatemala, like social media became bigger and bigger, and I could see people living quite free lives, enabling themselves to influence, to be thought leading influencers and use that to their advantage. And I just thought, you know what, like that could enable me to travel more freely and be generally more free. And so I did, when I wrapped up the business, I did decide that my second thing is going to be an online thing.
The online business now, you're the editor-in-chief of Disrupt Mag and the organizer of Disrupt Symposium. And this is a totally, there are in-person elements to this, but you are an online-based business. Could you just elaborate a bit on how it came about, how it was born?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I started as a podcaster, right? So I started growing a community online mainly through LinkedIn and interviewing people. And then towards the end of the pandemic, I started to organize virtual events. One of the reasons why I also attribute the big shift and what was a driving force behind, I wanted to have an online business. Those were sort of decisions based upon how I wanted to live my life in my 30s. But a big part of it also was that I wanted to learn how to run a business. I wanted to be a business person. At that stage, I attributed my misfortune with the charity to lack of business acumen, to not knowing how to grow, really. I think managing staff was intuitive at that stage. I obviously didn't have any business training, but growing a business, understanding how to scale, I had no idea where to go. And also because of the lack of business acumen, there was just a tremendous imposter syndrome that, to be fair, took me a very long time to grow out of. And I think if I just went to a business school, I would have not had that, because I'm quite brave and confident. But I suffered an imposter syndrome way too long in my life and in my career because of just simply not knowing what to do. And it was frustrating. And honestly, even now, going back to these emotions, I almost feel a sense of anger and frustration coming up. And that was really a big reason why I went on that journey of exploring matters of what makes a person successful in architecture. And so that was sort of that prominent question was why I started the podcast and I started blogging about it and growing a community around it. And I'm still in it. I'm still asking similar questions, maybe just a little bit more elevated through the magazine. But really, yeah, the growth between my podcasting days and then the magazine was just a response to the audience. But yeah, I guess the premise of traveling, having an online business, and still the exploration almost into these concepts of like success, profitability, and business systems and mindsets are still what drive me today with Disrupt.
That sounds really exciting. I love the fact that what Disrupt has become and what it's continuing to be is based on that engagement with your audience and your community, and actually discovering what is it that they want and providing that. And I think that's a fantastic approach.
It's very important. I'm sorry that I'm just going to like say that, because we say that so often in business, but do we actually do it? You know, as you identify your passion and you start developing whatever it is, a product or a service for your community, you just need to understand who these people are and what they really need. And you need to be nimble and allow to adjust.
I'd want to bring it back now to travel, a term that people might have heard of. They might not necessarily understand what it is. Digital nomads. I just want to ask, like, what does the term digital nomads mean to you? And would you consider yourself to be one?
Not anymore, actually. I had my days. For me, digital nomad is a person that moves around a lot, stays in hotels or Airbnb villas, and works out of different locations. Whether you're in employment or you run your own business, the concept is that you spend your working hours on a laptop in a wonderful place, and then you put down your laptop and you just go to the beach or a jungle or you name it, wherever. And I've done that. I've done that post-corona. I traveled quite a lot. I spent the whole summer between... I first lived in Spain, in Puglia Brava, and then I traveled through France, Italy to Greece, spent my summer in Greece, went to Bali and then Japan. And then I moved to Colombia where I'm still here. And so I did that for about 2 years. And every single time I would stay in a place pretty much as long as the visa permitted and move locations quite a lot. So in Bali, I was there 3 months, and for parts of it, I would stay in Canggu in different hotels. Then I would rent a villa. Then I went to East Bali. Then I went to Ubud and I rented a villa there. And so it would be anywhere between 3 weeks to a month that I would stay on location with shorter stays in hotels. It was great. It was fascinating. I loved it. Obviously, it sounds like a dream, I'm sure. But there are obviously downsides to it. One being you have to stay on top of your travel plans. You're basically really dependent on whatever's going to happen to you on a given day. Might be there is an electricity cut, there's no internet, the hotel doesn't have a good connection, and you know it's really loud where you're staying. Your travel plans got messed up, and you can't show up on a call, or you take a call standing somewhere in the middle of a street in Thailand and, you know, it's like cars and everything. You didn't find a good cafe place. So you're connecting through someone who's like sharing internet with you and it's just stressful. It does require a lot of planning ahead, and you just never can control what's going to happen when you travel. So of course, there's ways in which you can deal with it by booking yourself into villas, ensuring that they have strong internet, that you're going to land in a perfect type of scenario. But then again, you know, I was in Bali during the rain season, and when it rained really heavily, it would affect internet pretty much everywhere. The other things that like I didn't consider when I stepped into it is also time zones. You think you can manage it until you're there, and then it's really hard. So obviously you do get jet lag if you travel a lot, but also in Bali specifically, like most of my clients are actually in America and the UK. And in Bali specifically, I had to basically do all-nighters quite a lot in order to show up. And you can see even on YouTube, my podcast, I'm interviewing people in the middle of the night. So it would mean for me to have to wake up at 1 a.m., put my makeup on, and then turn some little light on and then interview people in the middle of the night on an interview like this, just because I'm in Bali and, you know, heck with it. That's my life decision. I can't just now ask people to meet me really late their time because of my podcast, right? So that sort of ended up being tiring. And then all in all, I think that you sort of start growing an anxiety about like where you're going to be next week and what's your life going to look like. And I also do want to say that it's actually quite expensive. No matter what is your budget and how you travel, you're always going to kind of eventually choose comfort because of the mission that you have for your business. And so comfort costs and, yeah, it does end up being more expensive. I came to a culminatory point in my life where I decided that also, you know, turning 36, I'm ready to settle. I want to build a life. And so not spending this tremendous amount of money per month on travel, but rather like investing. And so that changed last year massively for me. And then now I'm like basically settled, but I'm settled in the Caribbean. I live in Colombia. And it's wonderful. I still travel, but travel for business. I'm on New York time. So that's incredible because pretty much my whole day aligns with a lot of calls between the US and the UK. And it's perfect timing for everything. And it's not as exhausting. With 6 years in Guatemala, that was over 15 years now that I live in Latin America altogether, having spent 6 months last year in Peru as well. And I travel a lot in Central America as well. My boyfriend's Mexican. So there's just, yeah, it's just like I feel home here. I speak the language. I love these countries. And it is traveling, but in a different way right now. And so kind of settling. That's really kind of what's the new era.
The new era. The next chapter.
Exactly. That's right.
It sounds like, from what you've described, that being a digital nomad, despite what we might see on Instagram and TikTok, that it isn't just all sitting around on the beach, that there's actually, you've still got to do the work and there's a lot of logistics to sort out. Probably something that's maybe suited to most people for a season or two, not necessarily something for life. And maybe everybody's different, but it sounds like something that's maybe not sustainable for the long term. But having said all that, if there are any listeners out there, any architects or architectural technologists that are thinking that this sounds interesting, what type of work could they actually do? Like what type of work could a regular architect do as a digital nomad, or if they wanted to be more location independent?
The thing is, like, I think what's important to realize is that it can be tiring if your job doesn't align with your lifestyle. And in my case, unfortunately, I was sort of pushing myself to travel. But as I mentioned, some of the parameters of how I work, which is, for example, having to align to the US time zone, was just stopping me from being able to, you know, say, for example, exist in a day and sleep in the night, right? So eventually it takes a toll on you. But if you do, for example, if you're a social media influencer and your job is to have an engaging, interesting Instagram about architecture. And you travel and you wake up in the morning and all you do is create content. And you don't have calls with another part of the world, or you don't service clients internationally, and you basically just live for that social media channel, then I think you can do it. And in fact, it can be your business. You don't have that sort of conflict of having too much other time zones or whatever. Just follow your flow. You can do it. But if you do basically work for a company that is requiring you to do a certain office hours, then, you know, working on the other side of the world is just going to be impossible for you. I mean, it's just going to be, but you're going to have to do all-nighters because unfortunately you have 12 hours difference, 13 hour difference sometimes, you know, and so that's something you can't fight with or overcome. And I think if you're ready for it, you know, you can get a job that is remote. There's definitely a lot of architecture firms that are doing this for, you know, technicians, technologists, people that work with software. That's certainly possible. It's just a matter of like finding that sort of position and the studio being okay with it. And then, yeah, and then you just have like your normal working hours that you show up for, and then the rest is up to you what you're doing with your day. I don't know from my personal life because I didn't have an employee to work under. It was more just really trying to align my lifestyle to my own business. And so it did come to a point where I had to choose what matters to me more, growing my business or traveling and then paying a price on the other end, right? But if you decide to travel, say, South America and you work for an American company, you can actually do pretty normal working hours. And I do have friends. In fact, one of my best friends has just been here. She is Russian and she has an online business. In fact, two companies she works for. And she does some type of part-time hours for both, but then she puts on her laptop and she'll go kite surfing. She goes skydiving. She'll do a lot of different activities. She can travel and it's really just wonderful. So I think it does work. Again, it's definitely harder for her when she travels to the countries, obviously, where the time zone is not aligned. But other than that, it works. So, you know, if you have a job and employment that supports that sort of lifestyle, then you can explore a little bit more. If you are building your own business, you're just going to have to align your life to the priorities of that business too. You can't have everything, you know, because eventually something's going to have to give. And so, yeah. But to be fair, like also, I personally spent a fair amount of years in Asia. And so I will go and visit for a month, maybe doing a road trip around Japan, or it's kind of like a holiday right now, more than wanting to be in Asia. I love being here in this part of the world. And there's a lot of traveling to do here too. So so I think if you align it, you know, with your business objectives, then you can make it work.
Okay, so align what we do, the work that we do, with the overall business objectives that we have, and don't necessarily feel that you have to be boxed in just working a regular role for a regular practice. There are other opportunities. You mentioned there about the idea of, you know, maybe if you were able to build up a following on social media, that you're an influencer. That was another alternative that you mentioned there that could still be connected to architecture. There's probably a variety of different online-based businesses that don't require us to work regular office hours or be in the same place. So that's something that I think is an important lesson to just restate there, that, you know, if you do want to be location independent and have that lifestyle, that it doesn't necessarily have to be that you're just still working for a traditional practice in a traditional role and asking for permission to work remotely. It could be something completely different, but still connected to architecture. So I love that. There's a few different ideas for people there. What about paying taxes? You know, death and taxes, the two certainties in life for everybody. In your experience, how does that actually work if you're moving around a lot? Remember, don't forget to download the Architecture Business Blueprint, the step-by-step formula to freedom for architects, architectural technologists, and architectural designers. You can grab the blueprint without any charge at architecturebusinessclub.com/blueprint. And if you're enjoying this episode, then please leave a 5-star review or rating wherever you listen to podcasts. Now back to the show.
My business is registered in London, and so I pay taxes in the UK, and that's pretty much it. Everything goes through like British bank accounts, and I lived there as a student. I had an English student loan, so it was just kind of natural for me to register a business there. But like, you pay taxes where your business is registered. Now, in respect to where you live, there is a lot of different ways around it. If you are moving a lot, you don't have to have a tax residency in the place that you're traveling, right? For example, right now, even though I bought land here in Colombia, I'm here on a digital nomad visa. So it's for 2 years with, you can always extend it. But that doesn't oblige me to pay taxes within Colombia. So there's a lot of different rules around it. You just want to look into it. But you normally have a tax residency where you're from or where you operate a business. For me, it's the UK. And so I pay taxes in the UK, and it's always been the case. Even with my charity, actually, the business was registered in London. But I lived in Guatemala, and Guatemala does not have laws about double taxation or anything like that, especially on an NGO. So what you want to do is obviously understand, first and foremost, your business taxation and then your personal related to your residency. But like, it's not really that difficult, to be honest, or complicated. And it just aligns to, you know, the type of visa you get in the given country. So for example, Bali for residency is a whole process, right? And then like ownership, business registrations, you can't even buy land there really, unless you have someone local or register a business and a bunch of other things. And so obviously you're going to have to jump through a lot of legal hoops if you decide to invest or live in a given location. But I was there on a tourist visa. It was 3 months. And so I'm free to behave like a tourist in a given country whilst also having my business registered somewhere else and a tax residency somewhere else. And so that's really how it works. And you can do that for years. But yeah, you do pay taxes based upon your income in the country where your residency is.
That sounds more straightforward than I thought it would be. So that's quite reassuring, I think, for anyone listening that is thinking about doing this. So I'm glad.
Yeah, I mean, you have to consult your lawyer and stuff, but you get your head around it. It's really not that complicated.
Do you think there's any destinations that are particularly well suited to architecture professionals?
But you're interested in, you know, like certainly if you're like into urban, you know, I'm sure it's really interesting to visit some big cities like Lagos, or, you know, there's definitely incredible locations that the, you know, show in China, for example, you know, urban development. But then there's also parts of the world that are like extremely sustainable and have really high end of our social and environmental values implemented into the way that they develop, be it Scandinavia, for example. It's just, I think what traveling gives you is sort of that sort of well-roundedness and ability to understand where people come from, what makes them. For example, you know, today I spend hours on end every day talking to really interesting individuals from all over the world that run big architecture practices. And, you know, on average, I'll speak to someone in Scandinavia who was brought up in an incredible setup, you know, on a farm with really sustainably minded parents that were had a windmill and, you know, producing their own electricity and purifying the water. And then they moved on to be a director of sustainability at BIG, all the way through to people that have been exploring development within Africa or working in New York and sort of working within a more, I would say, certainly America, in my opinion, is as much as like, obviously, it's, there's a lot of like net zero and sustainable construction. The culture is not as sustainably minded as it is, for example, in Scandinavia or parts of Europe, where, you know, in Amsterdam, you'll have professionals like basically upper class, literally cycling and don't even have a driving license because they don't need to. And so, yeah, there's just all these sort of different parts of the world that really inform where people come from, where ideas come from, where certain approaches to architecture can come from. And I think that's fascinating. I think people should travel You know, I've been talking yesterday or the day before to Julia Watson, who is a professor, and she wrote books about something she quoted, low tech. And it's basically a series of approaches to development and architecture that indigenous people and communities have. And it's really just tremendous studying these cultures and these people and what sort of solutions they bring to design is really fascinating. And so, again, I just think travel gives you that well-roundedness. And, you know, in the respect of also just not just development and sustainability, but also even luxury, the different parts of the world where luxurious, beautiful stones come from, like quartz or marble or granite. And you know, that is really just fascinating and rich as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think travel, it's such a great way to broaden your horizons and to open your mind up to new ideas, new ways of thinking. And as you say, that if you're getting the opportunities to spend time in built environments where you're getting to see different styles of architecture, different buildings, different materials that you wouldn't normally be exposed to in your hometown or the area that you came from, that's really going to enrich the type of work that you can do in your practice. So yeah, absolutely, definitely worth doing some more travel if it's possible for you.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to also like not shy away from seeing travel only as like a tourist activity, but actually like try to combine it with your work or passion. Like, you know, do go and visit a quarry, or do go and visit some villages because they're doing something interesting there, or go exploring, seeing architectures, you know, not just museums that are open to public, but architectures that are built by famous architects. Go and see it, these libraries, these incredible places, because they inspire and it gives you a whole other feeling when you're there, another level of inspiration, understanding of the work of this architect, their vision, the spaces they created, you know. So I think really not shying away from like combining your tourism activity or travel with actually like growing in that inspiration, like exposing yourself to it and experiencing that too.
Absolutely. What do you think? What do you think architects should consider before deciding to become a digital nomad or to change things up to become location independent? Are there any things in particular that people should consider?
Do you know what? Like, I don't know really what should you consider per se, but I can say one thing, like live your life, live your dreams. If you want to travel, don't sit in a cubicle doing a cat monkey job. Stop that. Right now, immediately stop that. Basically, there is nothing in life that can go worse than you not giving it a shot. It's something you always wanted to do, right? And it's just nothing to me. Like, there's nothing worse than regret. There's nothing worse than not having acted on something that your soul inside telling you. If you're looking at someone's profile on Instagram and you're inspired, why are you inspired? If you feel a little sense of jealousy, is it because this could be your life? And deep inside you, you know that this could be your life, but you're not acting on it because of sets of fears or insecurities or self-sabotage, or someone told you, or maybe you're afraid that you've committed 7 years of your life into an education and now you finally got that job and you're working in this office. And how can you now just ditch all of that to be a traveler? Well, do you know what? You live only once. And to be fair, it's very funny, like I thought after living in Guatemala and like working there on my charity for 6 years, that basically I've got no way back into architecture, because I've built a bunch of mud houses, because for the most significant years between university and my 30s, I lived in a little village, like walking barefoot basically and doing all these projects. I thought that if I went to like Fosters and applied for a job, they would literally laugh at me and my portfolio. They never gave it a go, even though, to be fair, it would have been probably tremendous to go and work in a practice in my early 30s. And now I talk to like leaders of these huge firms and I tell them that story is like a matter of fact, like a funny thing. And they're like, this is tremendous. Like, we have very few candidates that come from this unique walks of life. But we don't hire based on your portfolio or like what softwares you know. Like, if we invite you to the interview, oftentimes we'll like already check your profile, but we're hiring people, individuals that can bring something to our office culture. And so something I wish I knew at the time is that even though I stepped away from architecture, it only made me as an individual more interesting. And maybe not for every single job opportunity, but there surely would be one or two that would be like, hell yeah, she's interesting. And she had an incredible, expertise or experience that could bring a lot to our London practice, you know? And so that's the thing. It's like sometimes when you think you step away from your traditional path that you're just like doomed now, this is it. I don't know, you're a backpacker or some type of hippie. It's not true. No, if you go out there to the world, living your dream, exploring your passions, you're developing skills that all these other people that stayed behind don't have now. So as you come back, you've got more to offer. And just know that everything you choose in life adds to your value. And don't forget that. And don't think that discriminates against you just because you didn't follow the traditional path. And so what I would say is, you know, go after your dreams and design your unique career, because like we live in these times right now where you can be successful in many different ways, shapes, and forms, and you can create your own life and you can make money and you can add value and you can contribute to academia and practice and other people's offices and many different spectrums of things. You can influence by allowing yourself to be you and developing who you truly are within, right? So your authentic self. And in order to allow yourself to grow, you have to go out there and explore these parts of you that inspire. Because inspiration is that inner voice telling you, I probably should be doing something different today. And so go out there and do it. I don't know how to prepare you better because you never know what's around the corner. The only thing is follow your heart, follow your inner voice. Because if you don't, you're literally not living your life. You're living a life that the education, the career, the university, the job, your mom, your parents, your religion told you to live. But like the only fullest life you came here to live is your own. And like, even though you studied so many years of architecture and did all these things and you think you should be doing, I think it's still very important to be you because that builds on skill sets that now our industry, not just architecture, but also the world at large is growing to appreciate. It's growing to appreciate the uniqueness within people and individuals. And so I think there's never been a better time to give it a go. And there is no one can tell you how to prepare. You can't just pack your backpack for living your fullest life. You have to just allow for it to be and grow into it and figure out how to be agile, to adapt. And sometimes, you know, you're going to step in a puddle or sometimes you're going to get your head burned with the sun. And so what? So be it. It's just the way you learn, really. And so, yeah, it applies to traveling. It applies to building businesses. It applies to life. It's all the same thing. You can't prepare for your best life. You can only hope for the best, but you have to go out of your comfort zone and experiment a little. And that's the only way that you can like kind of stretch your boundaries, you know, in the direction where your heart is telling you to go.
I love that. Follow your heart, be you. And I think another thing that everyone should remember is that, let's be honest, like most of life's regrets that we have is things that we haven't done. It's not the things that we do, it's the things that we don't do. So don't be limited and just do it. Give it a go.
Yeah. And also I think, you know, it's mad because we have a lot of dreams. Like I have a lot of dreams. We have a lot of dreams. And sometimes it's like, you know, I remember like when I was very young, we had this traveler woman in Poland that she was doing, she had like her own TV show traveling and she was doing a lot of like extreme sports activities and everything. And I always kind of wanted to do something like that, like have a TV show and travel. And my life went all the other ways. But I keep still remembering those little tiny dreams that like completely make no sense in my career today. And I'm still thinking that I should fulfill them in some way, shape, or form. You know, and that's the thing. It's like, why not? You can design a career to make it work. And so, again, going back to this whole conversation we had about traveling, if this is in your essence, and it certainly was in mine, yeah, if it's in your essence, you're going to have to figure out how you're going to make your career work with travel. And so either you go and, like I did, you know, go to study in a different place. Like I studied in London, then I worked in Shanghai, then I moved to Berlin for work, then I started a charity in Guatemala, then I was traveling for this, that, the other. So you find like a purpose why you travel, or you add purpose to your life as you travel. Whichever way you go, like you're gonna have to make it work. And so basically, I can't equip you any better than just telling you, like, know yourself, follow your heart. And if it is in your essence to travel, like, it's just going to bug you until you start fulfilling yourself. Basically, that's the truth.
That's brilliant. That's been a really inspiring conversation, Sarah. I'm sure that everyone listening is going to be enjoying this as much as I have. It's been fantastic. Is there anything else that you wanted to add that we haven't covered in the conversation?
I think the one thing is learn new things. I constantly learn new things. Not only I take lots of online courses, like pretty much I move from one to another nonstop. If I'm not subscribed to platforms like Mind Valley, on which I do meditation courses, self-development, business stuff, like social media courses, I subscribe to courses on like Instagram profiles that people put up about how to better travel, do hotel collaborations, work with brands, I don't know, develop your social media platforms, speak on stages, write a book, self-publish, you name it. Basically, if you want to stretch, you know, yourself into developing yourself, designing your perfect life, you just need to know so much of how people do it, right? So it's learning, like, never stop learning. I mean, that's the only thing I think that can equip you for being able to pull it off, really.
Continuous learning is so important, especially in our industry. And I think there's never been, I mean, in some ways, it's never been easier. There's so much content available and resources for people these days. So yeah, absolutely, so important to do that. I've got one final question for you. And It's so well suited. I ask this to every single guest that comes on the show, but it's like my travel question. So I also love travel and discovering new places. You've been to a lot of different places around the world, but could you just tell me one of your favorite places and what you love about it? It could be anywhere, near or far. It doesn't have to be the favorite. It could just be one of the places that springs to mind.
Yeah, there's really no place like Greece, no place like home. They say it's been home. I was brought up there, so, but it's just a magnificent country. It's just, I can't say enough, the people, the music, the food, I mean, the sea, the color of the sea, the way it makes you feel, how tranquil it is, the endless shores and islands, and I mean, I really can't say enough. The feeling you get there, how you slow down when you're there, it's just incredible. Perfect temperature, perfect weather, perfect beaches, food. So, you know, definitely a huge retirement plan for me. It's a little bit challenging economically to live there just because it's such a tourist-driven country that, you know, it kind of dies out. The islands do die out. And basically for 10 months in a year, you know, realistically speaking. So it's impossible to live in unless you're in Athens, but I'm not a city person anymore. I used to be. I'm not anymore. So now I live in the Caribbean on the beach, which is kind of the closest I found really to how I was brought up, but still having plans and dreams of investing in Greece for sure.
Oh, fantastic. I'm sure you get there one day. Sarah, thank you so much for this conversation. I've really enjoyed it. Could you please let everybody know where is the best place to connect with you?
Yeah, definitely. Disruptmag.com is the website of the magazine. It's really something I would say I promote the most today. There's been a lot of different activities, podcasts, courses, blogs, and things I've done. But I think finding me on LinkedIn, Sarah Colara, disruptmag.com, and then also Sarah@disruptmag.com is the email. And that's it, really. I think connecting on LinkedIn is probably the best because I promote also events there and other activities. And there is a newsletter and a lot of interviews with people we hold. So it's a wonderful platform to follow our activities and my life as well.
Awesome. So I recommend everyone goes and checks it out, disruptmad.com and LinkedIn to connect with Sarah. Brilliant. Okay, we'll leave it there. So thanks again ever so much, and I'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you.
Next time, I'll be chatting about lead generation. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Architecture Business Club. If you liked this episode, think other people might enjoy it, or just want to show your support for the show, then please leave a glowing 5-star review or rating wherever you listen to podcasts. It would mean so much to me and makes it easier for new listeners to discover the show. And if you haven't already done so, don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss another episode. If you want to connect with me, you can do that on most social media platforms. Just search for @MrJohnClayton. The best place to connect with me online, though, is on LinkedIn. You can find a link to my profile in the show notes. Remember, running your architecture business doesn't have to be hard, and you don't need to do it alone. This is Architecture Business Club.